The first thing I did when I arrived in London last week was to book a train out of town.
This train is for Clacton-on-Sea only.
You can't blame me because London was just freaking out after the EU referendum, after Brexit. Everyone was predicting imminent disaster, and I just had to get out of the bubble. I really wanted to hear from the people who voted leave, who voted to ditch the European Union once and for all. And everyone said, oh, well, in that case, you should go out to the seaside. Clacton-on-Sea. The EU referendum was close for the whole country, a real nail-biter. But all these little towns out on the seaside, they were voting to leave by 70-75%. Once upon a time, this is where Londoners would go for a weekend of sun and beer, but not anymore. We stopped by the first hotel we saw. We went in, and the man who owns the place, Bobby Reckie, looked amazed to see us. He said, oh, you don't want to stay here. You don't want to stay in Clacton.
There's nothing here. There is no industry here. There are no restaurants. There's no nightclubs. There is nothing attracting the younger generation.
As an innkeeper, like, shouldn't you be selling us more on this town? You should be promoting this town.
Okay, yeah, all right. So, oh yeah, that's a good. The thing is, though, you have to be realistic. You know, you ask me, what is there about this place? There is nothing about this place.
Who would want to come to Clacton-on-Sea for a break?
Worst town booster ever. Bobby said, look, just leave your bags here and go out and see the place for yourself. You want to talk to Leave voters, he said? Go for it. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith. In any breakup, there are always two sides to the story. So today on the show, a divorce story in two parts. First, we explore the town where almost everyone voted to walk away, to leave the European Union. And then we see what it's like on the other side of the breakup. What is it like to be the Europeans being left behind? We get on a plane and hit four European cities in just 12 hours.
We'd like to say a quick thank you and share a message from our Planet Money sponsor, Betterment. Betterment has fundamentally changed the way Americans save and invest for their future. Traditional investing solutions are expensive, complicated, and boring. But Betterment was built from the ground up with sophisticated, cutting-edge technology that recommends a personalized investment plan. Simply put, Betterment makes it easier, more straightforward, and less expensive to invest. For more information and up to 6 months free, visit betterment.com/planetmoney.
You know how a beach town feels in the winter? That's what Clacton-on-Sea is like in the middle of the summer. You know, they have the setups for skee ball and bumper cars and little booths for fried foods, but there's nobody there. You gotta play the games by yourself.
Ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Oh, yeah!
I don't really see any children anywhere. The main attraction seems to be sitting on benches and staring out to sea. You may have heard that there was this big age divide in the EU referendum. Young people in the UK voted to stay, older people voted to leave. And that, in a nutshell, explains the Clacton vote.
I'm 72, Anna's
89.
When you get to a certain age, you're quite braggy about it, see?
Joan Bowles and her friend Anna sit on a bench on a bluff looking out over the water. They're wearing coats. Joan is the designated spokeswoman of the pair. She's twice the size of Anna, twice as loud. Always asks Anna, isn't that right? But doesn't actually wait for an answer. They both voted to leave the EU, and they could not wait to see the results that night. Joan didn't want to go to sleep.
No, I was laid in bed. I had the telly on.
Wait, at 2 or 3 in the morning?
Of course. Old people don't sleep, do we, Anna? We don't work, so we ain't tired. And it said remain, and I couldn't read it. So I put my glasses on, and when they said the vote is going to be leave, I thought, yes, thank you very much.
For Joan, the vote felt personal, a way to register how she felt about all the changes in Britain over the last 40 years. I mean, she remembers the sort of honeymoon period when Britain first joined the common market in the 1970s.
And when we went in, we were told it was going to be common trade among countries, right? Common trade. It was going to be wonderful. I mean, we were conned, weren't we, Anna?
Yes.
Joan says conned because she felt like there were promises made at the very beginning, that life would get better in the UK for people like her. Joan worked as a bookkeeper in a dairy, considered herself working class, and she remembers all the things that started to bug her in the relationship. There were more regulations from the EU. Milk started to be imported from Europe. Then there was the recession of the 1980s, factories being shut down, people losing jobs. Now, this wasn't the fault of Britain joining the EU. Economists will tell you how much richer the whole country got as part of the European Union. It's just that Joan and her friends didn't feel that. For them, everything was getting worse for the working class, and the EU was to blame.
Well, that was the start of us feeling that, you know, we had no power. And then I think with the EU, it just confirmed. We had no power, did we, Anna? And, well, we still haven't with the EU. You can't complain because there's the door, you know?
During the referendum campaign, the people who were pushing for Brexit spoke directly to Joan's concern. The phrase they used over and over again in ads and speeches was take back control. Take back control of your country. And that sounded pretty good to Joan, even if she hated each and every one of the British politicians that were saying it.
We've always been governed by people we don't trust, right? Because they go to Eton, they go to Cambridge, they're taught how to be a politician, and that's their profession. Never done a day's work in their life. But we don't trust them. The working class can't trust anybody because they always screw us over.
So you would rather be screwed over by your own politicians rather than European politicians?
Yes, yeah, because I know what to expect from mine.
Which is very little.
Being screwed over. It's our country, isn't it, Anna?
Yes.
I don't want a foreigner doing it to me.
Because?
Because I don't like foreigners.
The amazing thing about talking to Joan is no matter how satisfied she was with this vote, with leaving the EU, she didn't think it was going to make life better for her or for the UK, at least during her lifetime, maybe for her grandkids. But then, you know, this vote was not about making things better. It was a little bit about revenge, revenge of the working class. Joan leaned back, and she finally let her friend Anna speak. You could barely hear her. She leaned forward, and she whispered, "We don't like."
We don't like being told what to do.
She doesn't like being told what to do. Before I leave, I mentioned to Joan and Anna that I am going to head to Europe to hear the other side of this divorce. And is there any message that I should bring over there? You know, no hard feelings or something like that?
We don't care. The French hate us. Mind you, we hate them. The Germans hate us. We've been at war with most of them half the time.
All right, I'm going to take that as a no. They have nothing to say to Europe. But I wanted to hear what Europe had to say, and I wanted to talk to as many Europeans as possible. And I realized there is an easy and fun way to do this. One of the things that's bound Europe together, at least so far, is cheap airline flights. So I get a taxi.
My name is İsmet Türkoğlu.
And where are we going?
To Luton Airport.
Luton Airport. It's a terminal outside of London where you can catch these really low-cost airlines like EasyJet and Ryanair. And once you start looking at their websites, you can see why people don't go to Clacton-on-Sea anymore. For instance, the train out to the seaside was $100. Listen to the deal that the cab driver got the other day.
I've done trips to Copenhagen, day return, fly out in the morning, come back in the evening. It was something like, if I remember, £9.78 or something like that. I mean,
that's like $15 for us, round trip to Copenhagen from London.
Yeah.
Did you even want to go to Copenhagen?
For that price, it's crazy not to go.
I think that's going to be my new motto, crazy not to go. I booked a bunch of cheap flights. London to Paris, to Copenhagen, to Norway, all in one day. So, bad news, I don't get to leave any of the airports. The upside, though, a captive audience of Europeans from all over the continent. All right, first step, travel light, underwear, toothbrush, tiny little backpack, recording equipment. If you've ever wondered what the inside of an X-ray machine sounds like, I'm going to leave this on.
Do I have to take off my shoes?
First flight leaves at 6 a.m. It's an EasyJet to Paris, Charles de Gaulle Airport.
Your convenience, there are three toilets on board, one to the front and two to the rear.
And since we're talking breakups, as soon as I land in Paris, I start looking for the saddest face I can find. It's staring back at me from behind the sealed-in glass of the airport smoking room. Laurent Apopel is exactly how Joan and Anna probably picture a French man. Slick-backed hair, stylish jacket, smoking a thin cigarette. He's taking the breakup with the UK pretty hard.
It was like cool to have England part of our life, and I'm quite afraid that the same kind of things are going to happen in France.
When you first get married, it's hard to even contemplate the idea of divorce. Then maybe your friends start to get divorced and you realize, oh, well, that option is on the table. You start to think hard about your own relationship. And that's what's bringing Laurent down. France has the same problem that I saw in Clacton-on-Sea. They have a lot of people who feel screwed by the modern world.
A lot of people out of Paris, out of cities, they need to find enemies. So, and the easiest enemies are the foreigner, the people from the city, the rich.
And just like in the UK, Laurent says there are plenty of politicians in France willing to direct that anger at the European Union.
To say the reason why we can't give you money is because of Europe, the reason why you need to be paid less is because of Europe. So when you, for years, you say that, people at the end think you're right. You have like 35% of the people who are voting for extreme right populist parties.
You say 35%?
At least. So at one point, maybe they will win.
That's the voice telling us that we're about to miss our next flight. We're flying in the same plane to Copenhagen, some cheap airline I had never heard of before, Vueling.
Vueling looks a lot like EasyJet, bright colors, same logos and such. But this is the Spanish version. How do you say the name of this flight? Vueling?
Vueling, yeah.
Vueling.
Vueling.
Vueling. Does nothing. The word mean anything?
No, it's just the name.
It's just a name.
Yeah.
And it is an inspiring flight.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry. Europeans of all kind united together in the joys of cramped legroom and $4 bottles of water. Ooh, selfie sticks on sale. 79 kroners. Copenhagen. The airport is big and modern and shiny and soulless, just like the EU itself. Everyone here is on business and rushing about to some other European capital. And Copenhagen, I can report from thorough interviews done in Terminal 3, Copenhagen is taking a more mature view of the divorce. I decided to stake out Gate D2 because the next flight is to Brussels, the headquarters of the European Union. In fact, everyone uses that name Brussels as shorthand for the EU. As in, we hate those unelected bureaucrats in Brussels, don't we, Anna? What's it like to be from Brussels when basically the name's an insult?
Of course it bothers us, but we're getting used to it, to be quite honest with you.
Tessa de Smit has been traveling all day. She's slumped into a corner chair in her business suit. She sells medical heart monitors to hearts all over Europe. The UK was never really in the relationship, she says. Not all the way. Not the way the rest of Europe was. They never adopted the euro currency. They stuck with the pound, the picture of the queen. They kept all of their English habits.
They're still driving the, for us, for Europe, the wrong side of the road.
Because of the side of the road they drive
not,
on.
Not just this, it's just an example, but you know.
But it does stand out, though.
Yeah. It is stubborn. It is always a little bit different to the British. Yeah.
It's like a couple that doesn't get a joint checking account. It's not necessarily a warning sign. I'm not saying that, but it sure makes the separation easier. Tessa says you have to commit to a union. You have to live it and breathe it. And as for the future of the UK, well, like with any ex, she's torn.
Will they be happier? That's the question. If they are actually going to be better off, then the EU should be worried.
They're like, we have all these jobs, we're so rich,
yeah.
We're so happy, our lives are better.
Then it will be very bad for the EU.
Because then other countries might want to be single, too. Tessa boards her flight, and I have to rush across the airport to catch mine. All right, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the last leg of my very cheap, uneventful European vacation is Bergen, Norway. You know, most of the flights I took were pretty random. I just searched for the cheapest flight. But I wanted to go to Norway in particular, because Norway shows that there is another option for the UK right now. Decades ago, Norway had a vote, and they rejected joining the European Union, and so instead they pay a bunch of money to keep the borders open for goods and travel. You can sort of think of Norway as a third model for a breakup. It's a happy divorced person who still gets along with their former spouse, sort of exes with benefits. My neighbor on the flight is a dapper middle-aged Norwegian, just back from doing business in Denmark, Torbjørg Wergeland. Is that a fjord?
Yes.
That's a fjord?
That's a fjord.
fjord, yeah.
I think that's my first fjord. I pictured them to be more dramatic, but it's a beautiful fjord.
Yeah, a small one.
Small fjord.
Yes.
Torberg sells granite. Ground up Norwegian granite rock to build roads and buildings and train stations all over Europe. And he says, you know what? At this point, he wouldn't even want to join the EU if it was offered. He gets all of the perks of being in the union with none of the commitment. So you are the granite king of Western Norway.
One of them. There is many of them. But we are selling 3 million ton a year to Europe.
3 million ton a year of rock from here.
Yes.
And so how does it affect you? You're not in the EU. You want to sell rock to the EU. How does it affect you?
It has no impact for us because we have a good agreement with the EU and they need the rock. That's why they want to get it, whatever we do.
There you go. Doesn't pay tariffs for its rocks, doesn't have to fill an enormous amount of paperwork, just sells granite. There's a catch, though. There always is. Norway does pay dues to the EU, doesn't get a vote in their policies. And because Norway wants access to the European common market, they have to let any citizen of the EU come to Norway to live and work. But in Norway's case, this is a huge benefit. Torberg says he does not have enough Norwegians to work in his company. Why don't Norwegians want to blast rock?
Because it's a heavy job, heavy work. Dirty, dusty, that's why.
So his quarries are filled with workers from Poland and Denmark, Germany. Torberg highly recommends this arrangement, by the way, but he warns that it may not work out well for the UK. He heard all the arguments during the EU vote, the fear of foreigners and foreign control, and he doesn't think that the UK will accept the kind of open borders that they have in Norway. You got to be chill when you're in an open relationship. Torberg has to rush out of the airport for an urgent rock meeting, and I... Well, after 14 hours of cheap flights, I am done. I am now on a plane back to London with a quick stop in Amsterdam because, obviously, it's cheaper. So let's recap. 4 European cities, 3 extremely cheap flights, 2 hot dogs, and 1 exhausted European traveler. On the flight, I had plenty of time to think back and realize that there was probably a much easier way to do all of this story. But, you know, I did get to see a fjord after all. I also had plenty of time to read the news of what was happening while I was sort of out of communication in the air. And it's starting to get painful in the breakup. You know that moment when you have to divide up all your belongings? Who gets the dog? Who needs the bookcases? Already Europe and the UK are fighting over who gets what. The London banks and investment firms, the regulatory agencies, even the airline I had been flying earlier that day, EasyJet. EasyJet is based in the UK, employs people all over Europe, and because the UK is part of the EU, EasyJet has access to all of the routes all over Europe. It's one of the things that made this whole trip so cheap. And now the company is worried. EasyJet announced that they were looking into moving their headquarters from outside London to somewhere else, to somewhere in Europe. Let us know what you thought of today's show or any of our shows. We always love to hear from you. You can email us, planetmoney@npr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're at Planet Money. I am personally at Radio Smith. And now that you're finished this episode, may I recommend a good cry? And not just a little tear down the cheek kind of cry, but a deep, sobbing, emotional cry. That's what you can get from the podcast StoryCorps from NPR. It's a collection of people talking to each other about emotional moments in their life. StoryCorps, you can find it wherever fine podcasts are sold. Special thanks today to our producer, Nick Fountain, otherwise known as the world's greatest travel agent. I'm Robert Smith. Thanks for listening.